Great to have the little chat with us, the AFL Games record holder on a Friday morning, all the way through the AFL season. He's back again. Brent Harvey, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, boys. No football this weekend. Quick, Whitey, yes or no? You like the buy?
No.
You don't?
No, we should just keep going.
So a fan, from a fan's point of view, no buy. From a player's point of view,
I think it's been proven now that the footy has been better quality through the finals by having the break. I think that we've got enough of a sample to suggest that that's the case.
Which one team, like 2016, the Bulldogs would not have won the flag if they didn't have the bye. Which one team does it suit this year?
Good question. I would say the Giants.
Yep.
Off the top.
I would agree with it.
I think that they get a few players back, but also the few players that are a bit banged up that needed the break. So I would say
good call.
Them.
Who would you say, Brent?
Yeah, I would have said Giants as well. I think the Pies with the goey probably suits them a little bit as well. A couple of Stevenson, another big training session into him after one.
That's not a bad call either.
So maybe the Pies, but I agree with the Giants as well.
Righto. Are you playing this weekend?
We are, first final for
hang
us.
Hang on, is this North Heidelberg versus Heidelberg for the first time in however many years?
In a final? It would be. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Who's ground?
I read that somewhere else.
Preston City Oval.
Neutral territory.
All finals at Preston City Oval.
Is it an all-ticketed affair?
I think it might be.
Yeah, it would be.
Big event. Mm. Big event around the northern suburbs.
It's a serious question. Do you get as nervous about playing in something like that, particularly now you're a coach, as you would be a game when you played for North Melbourne?
Oh, I do get nervous still. And that's something that I always said that I'll miss when I stop playing football. Now, I thought that was AFL, but I still get those little nerves in the belly before most games, not even just the final, before most games. So that's something I'll definitely miss when football stops in general, and whether I get that same effect from coaching or whatever it is. I still get nervous when I watch my son play. So I think I've just got that little nervous footy feeling in me, which is nice.
Butterflies.
Yeah.
Butterflies. Let's have a look at the Beaten Brigade this year in the 2019 AFL season, boys. We can have a bit of a chat about all the clubs. We've got 10 to get through, so we've got plenty of time and we've got plenty of teams. So fodder willy-nilly. The Gold Coast Suns finished on the bottom of the ladder. Let's go bottom to top, or bottom 18 to 9 is what we'll do. Gold Coast Suns finished on the bottom of the ladder. They were very, very ordinary for the majority of the season after they started pretty well, must be said for them. But they finished ordinary. What do we do? How do we fix the Gold Coast Suns, Boomer? I'm going to go straight to you on this one.
Good luck.
And what do we do with them, and how do we get them to be a 5-6 win team maybe next year?
That's the process, Half. They're not going to go and win 8 games next year.
Yeah.
There's tiny little steps. A couple of things worked for them this year in terms of the start of the season. They won 3 out of 4.
Yep.
And then, of course, they went on and lost 19, whatever it was, in a row. They signed a couple of key players for me. In particular, they got the signature of Isaac Rankin, which was huge for an extension for a young boy who always said, or people thought, he was going to go back to Adelaide. Jared Witts, who I thought had a fantastic year. They got the extension from him. And Took Miller, who's a leader there as well. So they got some good signings. They got some games into some young kids. Ben King played 14 games, kicked 17 goals. And Jack Lukosius, who didn't have an amazing year for a first-yearer, but played in all different positions, and he's going to be a star of the future as well. So a few little things did work, but it's baby steps.
Yeah.
They've got to go. They've won 3 this year. They've got to aim for 5 or 6 next year. And for me, it's bringing in some people that will help with the culture to retain players at the football club.
Okay, so we were talking about this earlier this morning, the Sean Burgoyne situation, where it looks like he's been offered a 3-year deal, the makeup of which I think is pretty fluid in terms of playing / coaching.
3 years?
3 years.
He might get the 432, will he?
He might get the 432. He might get there. So that's why one of the reasons I brought it up, I must admit. But also because of that, culturally, that's the biggest shift that needs to happen, isn't it?
It's got to be
off the field as opposed to what's on the field, because you'll get the on the field on the back of the off field.
And it's the good people. You can't just go out and grab a couple of senior players and say this is how it works, because it doesn't. You've got to bring him in and teach him about culture and have fun. Enjoy what you do and all that sort of stuff. Sean Burgoyne fits the bill, doesn't he?
Yep.
Whether it's 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, whatever he plays, he's one of those people that can build a good culture. But they went out last year and got some players of Holland Smith, Murdoch, Homsch, Miles. I don't know none of those guys, so I don't know if they're the correct characters, but they need to continue to bring in good people that can play a little bit of football as well.
Yeah.
Do we know what style they've got yet? Have we worked out what Stuart Hughes? No.
No, not yet. Oh, I haven't anyway.
Daniel, have you figured out? He hasn't got the cattle to put it.
It's fairly conservative numbers back congestion style and then try and slingshot. That seems to be what I've seen from the Gold Coast.
They just run out of steam. They just can't go in the second half of every year, can they?
It's not even the second half. It's second half of quarters.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of games this year, and you get to the 10-minute mark, and then they just drop completely off. And it is probably in the second half of the season, but it's within games and within quarters. So that's they've got a little bit of work to do there. It's amazing. They can give up Jared Lyons just like that. He can go to a team that finishes in the top two of the ladder and have a huge impact. The other thing they need, Daniel, is the priority pick. It's unfortunate, but they need it.
Do they need it to be a young player, or should they be forced, which is my opinion, should they be forced to trade it for an experienced campaigner?
Everyone says, yep, let's give it to them. They'll on-trade it, and they'll get a seasoned campaigner. There's the top two in the draft this year, Matty Rao and Noah Anderson.
Yep.
Best mates. Went to school together, play all their junior football together. Do they get them to up there and do the Brisbane philosophy of getting mates up there, and that will retain those players? Rankin and Lukosius, both from South Australia. Hopefully they stay, hopefully they stay at the Gold Coast Suns together.
Yep.
Now they're starting to get, there's four kids there that are going to be there for hopefully 15 years. Maybe that's the way to go as well.
What would you get for picks one and two if you traded them, Whitey?
What do you want? They're good players too, Whitey.
I know Malcolm Blight talked about trading one and two and getting the Crouch brothers and then throw someone else in as well and then try and build your team that way if Adelaide was looking at doing something, you know, dramatic.
Yeah.
I think it's... Look, I would have traded one and two if I was the Suns, if that was the equation. But I've changed my philosophy based on the fact that Rowell and Anderson are likely to go 1-2. So if you package them up then with Rankin and Lukosius and King, Ainsworth, you're starting to build a bit of a nice group of players.
Seven or eight players going, rightio, we can take this club where it needs to get to. Yes, it's not going to happen in 2020, but in 2024-5, that can be our vision, and we can have them there.
But to answer your question, I think what they need is 23 to 26-year-olds. At the moment, they're going through a point where they've got the kids and then they've got the older players, and that real group in the middle they don't have.
Which is
that's what they need to target. But how you do that, how you get those people in the prime of their careers to go to the Suns as opposed to at either end of their careers, that's why they've got themselves in this terrible cycle at the moment.
Mm. And those players that they're getting at that age bracket are the Hall and Smiths and Murdochs, but they're not
good enough.
They're not good enough to. And they played some good football at the top teams, but when you take them out and go to a bottom team, all of a sudden you're nearly the best player. It doesn't work like that.
All right, so it's the Gold Coast Suns, bottom of the ladder. 4 wins last year, 3 wins this year. Melbourne are a fascinating story. They had 14 wins last year, finished 5th, ended up making a preliminary final, of course, before being exited by the West Coast Eagles, the premiers, eventually, of this season. They had 5 wins this year, Scotty Gallen, and it's been one disaster after the other.
I still can't really figure this out. I mean, what was last year? Was it real? Or is that the real Melbourne, the way they played? They tried to play the same way. A lot of guys got injured, but I just don't know. I actually don't know what we're going to get next year.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Did Melbourne, were they one of those teams that listened to all the off-season talk and maybe got ahead of themselves and didn't work as hard as they probably should have?
Did they get found out with the way they played in 18 that other teams knew how they played, so adjusted accordingly?
Yeah, I think so. I talk about that snowballing effect a lot, Whitey. Does Hogan leaving, it's massive. I know Wiedemann played a fairly good final series and kicked 4 goals. Everyone says, oh, there he is, that's a replacement. It just doesn't work like that.
Hogan missed a lot of footy last year and Melbourne still played well, though.
Yeah, I know. But their leading goal kicker this year, do you know who it was and how many?
Was it Fritz? Who came
Petrarca.
Late? Petrarca.
Yep.
20-odd?
22 21. Goals.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's leading bad. Goal kicker Petrarca.
That'd almost be an old time.
But they had no pressure. Like there was no pressure forward. They couldn't keep the ball forward.
Their inside mids didn't have a great year. Viney didn't have a great year. Jones got pushed to the outside at the start of the year and didn't have a great year. Brayshaw got manoeuvred in all different positions. They tried a lot of stuff in the second part of the season, but at the end of the day, when you finish high the year before and you've got expectations, they just didn't live up to it.
And a percentage of 131 last year. This year, 78. They're the third, just listening to the By the Numbers podcast.
Which was outstanding this week.
Again, you can track down the RSN podcast.
Well, you know what happened? It became a bumper edition. We went out to an hour.
Oh, well, wow. That's unacceptable. We keep it to 40,
who hosted
43 minutes.
Me.
Max.
Oh, okay.
That's why it went so long.
They're really bold, the D's, the way they play. It's how they got scored so heavily last year, but teams had worked them out. To your point, Whitey, it wasn't what 2019 footy looked like. They were 17th from boundary use from defensive 50. All the good teams, all the top four teams, play are really high in that number, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And they were third for corridor use from defensive 50. So they went straight through the middle. From defensive 50, which has been known, if you can stop that, you can open them up on the way back, which is what's happened because they were 17th in scoring and 17th in defending scores. So they were poor at both ends.
And you know what they didn't do? They did not beat one top eight team.
Well, they didn't beat many teams.
No, I know that. Only beat five. Was just, yeah, but there's no top eight teams in there.
Yeah,
I think Fremantle knocked over five top eight teams.
Yeah, they did.
And Melbourne did not beat one team in the top eight, which probably says that come finals time,
I'll give a bit of credit here to my father, my dad, same person. and he said, "You watch Melbourne play; they all charge in for the ball, and the opposition have a couple hang out, and then they get the ball, and then just give it back to the opposition. And you watch them; it's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but they all go in for the ball, and there's no one out to give it to, you know. And it's almost the opposition almost put a ring around Melbourne, all fighting for the ball." And then they give
that's why Richmond are so good, because Richmond balance. Have the outliers, and they know their one or two go in are going to get it. Whereas Oliver, Brayshaw, Viney...
They throw the ball around.
And they see it and want to go and get it and get a stat. They all want to get 35 touches.
Well, I think it's almost been a condition thing, half, that they all just... It's an outnumbering at the contest. It's Brendan McCartney's method of that's what you do. And that's why I feel at times that they've been worked out. They'll let them fight over the ball and we'll just ring them and they'll give it back to us.
Sydney, Hawthorn, Gold Coast, Freo, Carlton were the teams they beat. That's not great form.
And they beat Gold Coast in the last second.
They did, yes. That is correct.
That's right.
That is correct. What they will do is get a good look. Being at the bottom of the ladder, they'll get a cushy draw. And if they're actually any good and this was the blip, they will charge.
What do they need?
Get an opportunity.
Going forward, what do they need?
Well, I reckon they need another key forward. I reckon they need outside class.
They need outside run. That's exactly what they need.
Outside class.
Because they've got one of the most dominant ruckmen, and they still can't win games.
You probably thought later in the season too, when Lever was back, May was back, or this their defence will hold up a little bit more. But when you're under that much siege, the back line doesn't or can't hold up, regardless of who you've got.
You know what's going to happen here, Daniel?
What's that?
We'll get through half the teams.
No, we're not. We're going to get through. We're going to get through the Blues. We're going to straight to the Blues here. That's the D's. The Blues charged late, didn't they? They were one of the stories of the year, without a doubt. That last year, they finished 18th. And they had two wins last year. This year, they finished 16th and had seven, which was a significant progression under David Teague in the back half of the season. How did you see that, Whitey, the development of the Blues?
Oh, look, I think they were fantastic in the second half of the year under David Teague. The challenge for Carlton is going to be now it matters when they start next year. It was almost like they were rolling with no pressure and all that sort of thing, and it was all fresh under David Teague. Once the season restarts, the competition restarts, how are they going to go with a bit more expectation placed on them? But, you know, they're improving at a good rate, and I think their midfield's good. They really like their forward line, as David Teague said yesterday. So they feel that they've got most of the components there. It's just a question of whether they can turn a 7 or 8 winning season into a 12 to 13 winning season. I'm not sure whether they're quite good enough to do that next year.
They get a few players back. Charlie Kurnow only played 11 games this year, and they hopefully everything goes right for Sam Doherty as well.
Yep.
So they get a couple of really good players back into their lineup. Harry McKay's played a lot of football now. I pleaded with Carlton at the start of this season, the end of last season when the draft was on, about not trading away pick number one. Now, Sam Walsh has been, I think he clocked up the most possessions ever on debut year, so unbelievable.
He's a terrific player.
How does the Liam Stocker trade look now?
Well, I don't think we know enough about Liam Stocker yet to be able to judge that.
But the fact that Adelaide finished lower than was anticipated, Carlton probably finished
the situation,
a little bit higher.
But Liam Stocker still has to be a good player to judge that, and I think it's far too early
to
tell.
Yep. They won five of the last nine as well under Teague, which is which you mentioned, which is fantastic. Mitch McGovern, They get another player there, I reckon, too.
Yeah, I agree.
He'll be okay, yeah.
Because he got a bit of a slap in the back of the head when he had to miss a couple of weeks through his skin folds. So he'll come back bigger and better as well, so I think. Hopefully not bigger, just better.
I asked this question of Half yesterday. Should Carlton go after Eddie Betts? Is that the player they need, or should that just be left for someone else?
He doesn't fit their mould of what they're about right now. Is that a fairy tale little ending? If he's got ambitions to coach and do one of those phase in for... He still kicked 37 goals this year. And he had a really average year. He got dropped and everything
12 goals came against the Suns. Yeah.
If it's spot 44...
Forgot about that.
If it's spot 44 on the list and they've got everything else they want, I'd do it.
If there's a choice between Papley and Betts, I'm getting Tom Papley.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the age. He's 25 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not going to pay Eddie Papley money.
Dale Thomas or Eddie Betts?
Eddie Betts.
With Doherty coming back, hopefully Eddie Betts.
Look,
depends on what happens.
I think they need to be smart. If they can get one good trade in or one good player, you know, a 24, 25-year-old, like a sort of McGovern type, if they get another good one, they'll be set up. All right. I like them.
The Blues are on the up. And we spoke to David Teague yesterday. If you missed that interview, straight to the website, rsn.net.au. It was a good chat with the new coach of the Navy Blues. 21 past 7 on a Friday morning. It's a Friday footy review, season review with Brent Harvey today, the AFL Games record holder. We're 3 down. We have 7 to go. We'll do it after this.
Victoria's own Breakfast Club.
Except we're not playing finals. And, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that. You know, Luke Parker's played 190 games of football since his debut, and it's the first time he hasn't played in a final series. And we'll be looking on with envy over the next 5 weeks as teams prepare for a final series. And, you know, for the first time in 10 years, we're not going to do it. We're disappointed with that.
24 past 7 on the Friday footy season review with Brent Harvey on the Breakfast Club at RSN 927. That is the voice of John Longmire, who, as you heard through that grab, and the first time in his coaching tenure at the Sydney Swans, they will not be a part of September. The Sydney Swans, and we're working our way up from the bottom of the ladder, Gold Coast, up into Hawthorn in ninth position on the ladder in our footy season review today. Sydney boys finished 6th last season with 14 wins. This year, they were 15th. With 8 wins. Interesting stats on the By the Numbers podcast I came across yesterday. Their average losing margin is the lowest the competition's ever seen for a team that's lost over 14 matches, which is 19.5 points. They both lost 5 matches with them in Brisbane last year. Both lost 5 matches by under 10 points. So look at that. They're nice and close. And they were the second youngest 22 this season on average. So whilst they've fallen down the ladder, they've been able to minimise the damage, it seems, and then rebuild in front of our very eyes, Boomer.
You're spot on. They're in rebuild phase, but they don't rebuild like every other team in the competition. They rebuild like Geelong and Hawthorn sort of do on the go. You mentioned that they're the average, on average, are the second youngest team. Now, that's a good stat to go forward and propel you. And Blakey McCartan, 19 years old.
Yep.
Haywood's 20. Florent Ronk, he's 21. 22 is Dawson, who I really like. He's Malikan, good. Mills. 23, Heaney, Hewitt, Papley. 24, Alira, and Zach Jones. Whew. It's a big list coming through for under 25s.
And quality.
And quality. What they did this year with Buddy being injured, they got games into McCartan, who played 19 games, and also Jordan Dawson played 20. So if Buddy was up and about, they probably didn't get those games into those young kids.
Yep.
So I think they're going to be better. They got a star there who was... I think Nick Blakey ended up being taken 10 or something, wasn't it?
Yep.
He's a top 4 draft pick.
Yep.
This year, at the minute, the way it sits, they get another top 4 draft pick. Sydney Swans wouldn't have had that forever.
No, and not just that, Boomer, but a Josh Kennedy, a Luke Parker gets an extra month of pre-season or an extra month of sort of semi-rest, not having to go through a final series, which should hold them in good stead. I want shares in Sydney, and I want a lot of them because of everything that Boomer said. But then, and I think this has been lost a bit, is that you see all those blokes that were carried off the other day.
Grundy, Smith, Jack McVeigh.
Yep, but also you've got to add Tippett to that because he was essentially, from a money point of view, when he retired, they've freed up all this salary cap space. So with the young kids that they've got, they are a fascinating list management discussion as to A, what they do, but they've got so much money to spend.
No, I haven't added Tippett to that, but McVeigh, Jack, Grundy, Smith, 1,048 games.
Yeah.
exiting the football club. You know the last time that happened, Daniel?
North Melbourne a couple of years ago. Yeah. You, Del Sando and Florida.
Well played.
Yeah. Well played. And Petrie.
And, the big dish as well.
They haven't been spoken about, Scotty, in all the trade rumours and all that sort of stuff as to what they'll do.
If they can get a midfielder...
Well, that's 18th contested footy, 17th clearances this year. That's the concern.
If they can get a Coniglio, for example, someone of that ilk, they'll go quick. Because Buddy will be fit. And, like, no doubt he'll play better next year. Oh, that's obvious. I like them too.
I just hope they don't lose Papley and Zach Jones.
No, don't lose Papley. Zach Jones.
And I'm happy with Zach Jones.
You what? You'd lose him?
Yep.
If you got a good deal, you could.
They need to keep one of them. They need to keep one of them because they're both...
Papley's contracted for 23 and 24 years.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you can still trade him, though.
But Sydney are quiet. Something's happening.
Oh, no doubt. Something's happening. Everyone talking about Hawthorn, what they're doing behind the scenes. Sydney, they're...
Well, they're getting Joe Danaher next year, but that's not happening this year.
Or is it?
But he's mentor. They're just friends, just having just coffee and
right out there.
So unlike the Gold Coast team, Sydney have got that middle-aged bracket where they're actually okay. Franklin's 33, Kennedy's 31, Rampy and Sinclair are 30. Do they need to go out and maybe get an experienced player in that trade period? Or would you still bring in youth and add it to that list that I mentioned?
100 gamer.
If you can get a free agent.
Yeah.
A good free agent, that'd be excellent.
Yep.
Excellent.
Right, there are none.
Well, there might be some. Who knows how things work out? Who knows these things? There might be one popping up that we haven't quite thought of.
They'll need a pre-agent.
A pre-agent. Well, that might do too. That's the Swans. They're going places. I think we're all buying shares in the Swans. That's good business, as far as I'm concerned, in the footy share market. So Kilda, the next team up for grabs, finished 14th this year with 9 wins. Last year they were 16th with 4 wins. So doubled and a bit their wins. Lost their coach along the way, Whitey, but have found themselves... with something, have they got something, Sydney, or St Kilda, or are they just sort of hovering at the moment? Do they need plenty more? Obviously, the word is Brad Hill is pretty much locked and loaded there to get that deal done. And who knows what else they might be able to bring in. Paddy Ryder might be on their agenda as well.
I don't know what to make of St Kilda, to be honest. I think the best part about what happened to St Kilda in the second half of the year was Rowan Marshall's development, but also Caulfield and Hunter Clark, who were... two guys that were high draft picks that we weren't really sure about whether they were going to come on, and they really did in the second half of the year. And that's that top-end talent that they don't have Boomer a lot of. It looked like they had maybe a little bit more there than we thought. But to me, St Kilda are a bit of a vanilla team.
Yeah,
they need to get a bit of spunk about them in the way that they play, and a lot of that's due to not having the players that can play with that sort of razzle-dazzle.
So who's got the razzle?
They're just a bit vanilla.
One player that has got the razzle-dazzle, and they moved him up to the midfield, Jade Gresham.
Yep.
So he didn't kick as many goals, but his kicking inside 50 was elite.
Yep.
They got Jack Billings, who came up on the wing a little bit.
He's become a good, really, really good, dependable player.
So they've got two genuine outside ball users. They need another one. Now, a question for you, Whitey. Has Jake Carlisle and Dan Hannanbury worked to date?
I think both of them have had, you know, I mean, we know about Hannanbury's injuries, but Jake Carlisle had a broken back this year, came back and played some reasonable footy in the second half of the year. I don't think, we talked about this half, I don't think they can afford to lose him.
But maybe they
trade him to get more young talent coming in. I don't know.
Adam Tomlinson's been heavily linked. From the Giants. I'm not sure if he's Jake Carlisle. I don't think he is Jake Carlisle, but he's someone that's been linked. You mentioned outside run. That's the Brad Hill factor, so they might be able to do
that. They need defence.
I think
there's Nathan Brown.
Big time. He's a
but warrior, they're but thinking about trading out one of their best
Carlisle,
key defenders.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. They don't need a ruckman. Just don't stuff up Marshall.
They're big time into
I agree.
Ben King from Gold Coast. They'll be doing all they can to get him back
We'd like to see the King they've got.
Yeah,
he's
Max Winks. Winks, thank you.
Winks. Well, I'd like to see him play
in the
AFL.
Ben showed some signs that you'd sell a farm for him.
And they think Max is
better.
So it's...
because they could be the Kaczynski-Revolt combination of, many, many years ago where you just try and build your team around those two.
So they won 9 games.
Yep.
2 top 8 teams they beat as well. So I always just look at that, who they've been beating.
Yep, good.
You can beat up on the bottom teams and not beat the top teams, which means if you're happy, or if you're you know, lucky enough just to sneak in the finals, you're not going to do no damage anyway because you've got to judge yourself against the very best.
Yeah, but I suppose if you're in their position where you won four games the year before, you've got to be able to beat the teams around you at some point. So they've done that, and yep. then they've shown themselves a couple of times that they can beat the good teams as well. So that's not a bad outcome
Essendon,
for the Saints.
Essendon and Bulldogs were the two teams they beat, seventh and eighth.
They kind of haven't bottomed out, though, have they? They're a team that have sort of gone a little bit down, but they're in that zone where it's hard to rebuild with a lot of very high draft picks.
You know what they've done? They started the year really well, and they tricked everyone because I think they won four out of the first five.
Yeah.
And those teams were Gold Coast, Essendon, who the only team in the top eight, Hawthorn and Melbourne. We know what Melbourne had.
We thought they were better wins at the time.
At the time. So everyone started going, well, the Saints are going to make the finals. Yeah. And then when they don't, Richardson gets sacked, and they finish off the year really, really poorly. Three of the last seven, I think they won.
We're buying shares in the Saints?
Nope.
No.
Fremantle are the next team. They finished 13th. They had 9 wins this year, percentage of 91. Last year they had 8 wins with a percentage of 76, so they improved again. Not by much. They also don't have a coach at the minute.
Or do they?
Or do Ooh. They? Well, yeah. Stella, let's
Tom,
start.
Or Tom Duday.
What do we do with the Fremantle Dockers, Whitey?
Well, the amazing thing about Freo was that they were sixth on the ladder with a percentage of 111 after 13 rounds, and they'd beaten Collingwood at the MCG in a really high-quality game of footy. Then the bottom fell out of the place, but that was when they got their injuries. So I think they're a really hard team to peg.
And that game when they won in Canberra or GWS?
They beat GWS.
They played really well then. They did. Hogan was up and running. They had their defence. They look like a legitimate team. So
I find them really hard to peg.
Brad Hill's a loss, but I'm not as downbeat about them. If they get all of them on the park, Lobb and all those guys, Pierce,
it
down
looked
back.
Like their group of young kids were good.
Are they going to lose Langdon?
Langdon's gone.
Langdon Hill hurts because there's outside run.
Yeah, that's going to hurt a bit, I think.
Yeah, that's going to really, really hurt him. This is what I was talking about before. They beat Geelong, Brisbane, Collingwood, GWS and Bulldogs. Five of the top eight teams. So when they're up and running, you can get excited about it. St Kilda's different. You beat two teams in the top eight, seventh and eighth.
Yeah.
Then you look at Fremantle and see what they've done when everybody's on the park. It's huge. And you mentioned those injuries, Whitey. Hogan, Tabner, Lobb, Pierce, Sandylands played 55 games out of a possible 110. They played half the season, 55 games out of a possible 110 combined. And the travel factor is big for me.
But by losing Langdon and Hill, they'll get compensated probably with picks that maybe they just try and rush in as many of those young players to complement the likes of Brayshaw and Chera and these sorts of guys and bide their time a little bit, maybe. I don't know.
So what's their coach? Who's their coach going to be? You've alluded to
that. I think it'll be Justin Longmuir.
Right. Peter Sumich.
I think it'll be Justin Longmuir.
He knows something.
I think he does.
The travelling, I would have hated to play for West Coast or Fremantle.
Oh, mate.
Just travelling.
Fair up your clacker.
They played 10 games outside of Perth and won 2. That's not a great record when you're travelling pretty much every second week.
Yeah, no, it's hard yards. I admire that. That's why I admire West Coast and their success in the competition. What they've been able to do has been quite remarkable in the grand scheme of things. Do a great job. Now, that's the Fremantle Dockers. We might hold on them. I'm not sure we're buying, are we? We just might hold.
You get a good price.
Yeah, that would be great. You'd sprinkle a little bit.
Yeah. Because then others will jump on and you're already on.
Righto. That's Freo. We'll get to the remaining four teams after the break. Well done to Alexi Poprin, by the way, the US Open. Is through to the next round. He beat Kukushkin 2-6-7-5, 6-3-6-2.
That's a good win.
So a big win in the end, 6-3-6-2 in the last two sets. Good work by a young fella. Nice to have you with us on a Friday morning. Gorgeous day in Melbourne town. I hope it is wherever you are listening across the globe at rsn.net.au or on the RSN app, which if you haven't downloaded, you need to do so at your app store. It is a cracker for anytime, anywhere RSN action, which is good action as far as we're concerned. Let's have a look at some remaining teams from the AFL ladder that haven't qualified for the finals. That's what we're doing with Brent Harvey today on the Friday footy season review on the Breakfast Club. North Melbourne, Boomers boys, is the next team up for grabs. They finished in 12th position. Last year they were 9th with 12 wins. This year they were 12th with 10 wins. Percentage of 99 from 108 last year. Of course, midway through the season, boys, we lost another coach with Brad Scott exiting the building and Reece Shaw taking over. Boomer, you know this club and this team better than anyone in this room. What have you seen? Where can it go?
Can I start with debating the exclusion of Benny Brown in the All-Australian team, please?
No.
Can I do that?
Yeah, go on. Give us a bit.
Oh, well, he's kicked 12 more goals than the full forward, 10 more goals than the forward pocket. I know I looked at the stats and I know that Tom Hawkins had 20 more goal assists, but he's playing in a team that has got some genuine stars. North Melbourne haven't got those stars. The forward 50 entries are not as good, and he gets double teamed every single game. I just think it's been a long time since a Coleman medalist, and I know he didn't win it, has not made the All-Australian team. So if Jeremy Cameron doesn't play against Gold Coast in round 23 and kick 9 and they go out of their way to get in the football, he wins the Coleman medal and he wouldn't be in the team. It's just, I don't know. I thought he was very, very Graham Johncock, very stiffy.
By the way, one of the last Coleman medalists not to make the All-Australian team, Jack Riewoldt, is going to join us after 8 o'clock, I'm hearing too, which is good business too.
That's the rumour.
That's the rumour.
What do you think, Whitey? I know you're big on the All-Australian team. I've seen some tweets coming through and joined in with you.
I disagreed in Tom Hawkins in the sense I think you should have only had two tall forwards. But if you were going to play three, Ben Brown had to play in front of Tom Hawkins. Ben Brown wasn't in my team, personally, but either was Tom Hawkins.
I had the two. I had Cameron and Darling. They were my two kids.
Yeah, they were my two.
Okay.
But if they named three, I'm with Whitey. I think he should have been playing ahead of Tom.
Yep. All right, so the Kangas.
What about the Kangas?
No, I think they still need some polish on the outside. I think Sean Higgins has had an exceptional year again. Ben Cunnington's had a beautiful year, but he's the contested inside bull, and they've got a number of them. Young Simpkin's going to be a little bit of both. Dumont does a little bit of both, but probably more grunt inside.
I think he's underrated, Dumont.
He's a very good player. You know what he does? He works super hard.
Yeah, he does.
So for me, I'd love to get another outside player. And they got Pollock in, but he was a bit more outside on the wing and didn't kick the ball inside 50 as much as I probably would have liked. They got some fantastic young guys. And this is the exciting part, half, because you've got Simpkin, Larky, who come forward in leaps and bounds towards the end of the season. Dumont, who you just mentioned. Zerha, who had a breakout season. Young Taron Thomas, going to be an absolute... a young Daniel Wells in the mould of the way he moves. It just reminds me so much of Wellesy. And he tackles. He's got the defensive side as well. And then you've got Bailey Scott, who was a rising star. And young Curtis Taylor, I'm a massive fan of. So they've got some great youth coming through. They just need to get some games into them now. And I mentioned Brown before as well, and Cunnington's been a star. So I'd love some outside run.
Replacing Scott Thompson? Big hole.
Yeah, Sam Durden. Sam Durden's there and ready to go.
That's just...
Yeah, him and Benny McKay. But Sam Durden's the one that will slot straight in as a key defender.
What
do you reckon, Scotty? Who's going to replace him?
I think Benny's got some work.
Benny McKay?
No doubt. He's only three years in. He's got a lot of work to do.
The defence, that's the issue.
Well, what they don't do well is defend stoppages. They're 17th at defending stoppages. This year, points conceded from stoppages. That's what they didn't do well. What they did do under Reece Shaw is play a game that is a sustainable game, they talk about in football. Their time in forward half, they were third. First in points from forward half turnovers, fifth points from turnovers, fifth points differential from turnovers full stop. So that's a good modern brand of football under Reece Shaw. So that can work.
So the
sort out that points from stoppage.
The theory on the contested ball, yes. If we don't win it, if North Melbourne don't win it, and you've got Cunnington, Zeeble, and these type of guys in there, they don't spread as well.
Yep.
So if they don't win the ball, our strength becomes our weakness. That's the talk from outside. I think they've tried to address that with putting Simpkin in there and Taron Thomas running through there at times. So that's why I'm saying we probably need that little bit of outside polish to add to Sean Higgins and Jared Pollock.
All right, let's have a look at Adelaide. They finished 11th this year with 10 wins, a percentage of 100.85. Last year, they were 12th with 12 wins. What about that? With a percentage of 104. And what about this little stat from Champion Data they came up with by the numbers yesterday? Between rounds 5 and 13, they were 7-2. 7-2 through the middle stages of the year. And they end up with 10 wins for the year. Why?
They dined out on the draw at that point. So they took... And this is the problem with Adelaide, that they were seen as a bit of a flat-track bully. That they could... When they could get their game going against the weaker teams, the teams that were easier to play against, they were able to play quite well. But when they came up against good to very good teams, their game style and their game just completely broke down. And I think they are a broken club. And I think that's come out now. They're a broken club. They need to virtually start again. They can't be worried about what happened 2 years ago.
So
they need to start again.
So their list, in the state of their list, we've discussed that a fair bit in the last
horrible.
Month or so.
It's old and slow.
Old and slow are the two
things
words
you don't want to be in the AFL.
You do not want to be.
Do we know where they rank in terms of, well, Sydney was the second youngest team on average.
I haven't got that in front of me.
They'd be the oldest.
But they'd be close.
I think Hawthorn and Adelaide were two of the oldest.
Yeah.
Yep.
But what they is just refuse to defend and refuse to put any pressure on there. Clear 18th for pressure, 17th for points against, 15th points against from turnovers, and 17th time in forward half. So they just, they are, I agree with you, Whitey, there's a whole lot of issues clearly there. But if you are 18th in pressure for a team that won the premiership 2 years ago, then there's a whole lot of problems.
How they didn't figure out that pressure was a thing you've got to do in the modern game is...
Especially after what Richmond did to them in the grand final.
I think teams worked their style out as well. Their ball movement was really good. We see Betts, Jenkins, Lynch kick goals out the back, and it was all because they went through the middle, got that one handball and got the ball out the back. We haven't seen that this year. We probably didn't see it last year as well. So I think teams have really worked out their game style, and unfortunately they haven't changed it too much.
I just remember when they were a good team that we used to say, oh, Adelaide have only got one way to play. You know, they haven't got a sec. If some team challenges them, they don't know what to do. And it seems like that hasn't changed 2 years later.
It looks like they were screaming out for a key forward because Tex didn't have a great year. I know he finished off okay, but he didn't have a great year. Jenkins got dropped numerous times. Darcy Fogarty. Now, people are saying, yeah, but he wasn't playing great in the Sandful. Well, you've got to realise that there is some players are going to play better at a higher level because you go back, and I've seen it now at local level, you go back and play forward, the ball doesn't come in. So I'm tipping the Sandful players are not as good as the AFL players.
It feels that they don't give those young kids much of an opportunity. Chase Jones played really well in that last game against the Dogs. You go, this guy looks like he can play really well. Well, where's he been?
Well, Fogarty played four games.
Fogarty's another one.
Kicked 9 goals in the 4 games. So it probably says that he should have been playing a lot earlier. Yes, his form didn't warrant it, maybe, but you've got to throw him in, especially when you're dropping Jenkins and these type of guys.
Dropping Jenkins, dropping Betts, Gibbs on the outer. Lynch had an interrupted season. Walker didn't have a great season. Their forward half was a disaster.
They did find a player, though. Riley O'Brien. Kept Saucy Jacobs out of the team.
My man.
He was most improved player in the competition.
After his first quarter of football. And he just looked like someone who'd never seen the thing, let alone kicked it. And all of a sudden, he's come out and been a monster.
He's been fantastic.
Absolutely.
Kept Jacobs out of the team for 6 or 7 weeks.
If you're another team, you are looking at Adelaide's list and looking, okay, who could help us? You know, who could we take off their books just because...
You've got one. Yeah, I think we've spoke about it during the year. Hugh Greenwood.
Oh, no, he's number one. I was about to say, he's number one. Yeah. So there's a lot of clubs that would love him as that contested beast inside the contest.
What do they need?
Well, leg speed.
Some tacklers, obviously.
And people in the forward half.
They need to develop that youth. Fogarty's got to play nearly every game next year. They missed Tom Duday after a great first season.
Yeah.
So they have got some youth coming through, but they need to rejuvenate their list with youth that can play.
You can't go Sloan, crouch in the middle of the ground.
No.
Give that up.
To me, they need a new coach and a new direction and just start again. That's the feeling I get.
Gold Coast sort of stuff. Poor old Adelaide. They are in a rough trot, no doubt about that. Port Adelaide are the other team across town for them. They finished in 10th position with 11 wins. Last year they were 10th position with 12 wins. The percentage was pretty similar, so they've had a mediocre sort of vanilla, as your word before, Whitey. Average season. Port Adelaide, what do you make of them, Boomer?
Poor. Inconsistent team of the century.
See, I don't think they are vanilla. I think they're Neapolitan.
Well, they are, according to... No, you're probably right.
Because they're up and down.
That's a fair point. Yeah. That's a good analogy. Well played.
I'll tell you, their stats say, and you can maybe use this one on your little podcast.
By the numbers.
Number one inside 50 team. Number one time in forward half team. Number one for forward half possession gains. And number three for forward half stoppages. Now, they are top four team stats. But, unfortunately, they're the worst team at kicking goals from forward entries.
So let's go to the expected score ladder, Daniel.
Oh, talk to me.
Big thing. The expected
you talked
scores.
About this yesterday on By the Numbers.
So based on expected scores, Port Adelaide should have finished fifth with 14 wins and 8 losses. So 3 games were cost by poor kicking at goal.
What's an expected score? What, a shot at goal that's a point, not a goal?
Yeah, shot at goal that based on statistics and based on what we call it, averages or whatever. Averages.
Position on the field where they had the shot.
Goal should have been kicked than not. So it's more about reward for general play dominance And Port Adelaide were one team that weren't able to capitalise their good work further up their ground and probably capitalise on the game style that they had because they were horrendous when they got the ball inside 50 a lot, which is strange when you look at the players that are there.
Gray, Dixon, they've got decent players.
Well, here's another one. Who won their goal kicking?
If it's not Robbie Gray, it must be someone unknown soldier.
Sam Gray?
29 goals he kicked. Connor Rosie.
Really?
Is that right?
So it's amazing. And the thing they did do, they got the draft right.
They got the kids good.
Oh, they got the draft right.
Nailed it.
Connor Rosie, 22 games. Butters, 19 games. Dersma, 20 games. Played 61 games between their top three draft
picks. That's a good result.
So that's essentially replacing Wingard, Polek and Pitta.
Next 14 years, hopefully. So they got that part.
One step back for two steps forward.
Yeah, they nailed it. Well, I don't even know if they've gone backwards in them three players. I reckon it's nearly a break-even season. Rosie has been, he's been fantastic.
Yep.
For first year to come in, kick 29 goals, win their goal kicking. I think he kicked a couple of bags of five. Just a real good player. So found a couple of good ones there.
Yeah. So what are you buying?
Oh, look, I'm going to buy them because I really like them, but they're going to disappoint me because they're an inconsistent team. So if they can find a way to get more consistent, I think they are the logical team outside that we've spoken about so far that pushes up quite a bit, I reckon.
I'm a buyer. I like Port Adelaide. I
haven't won a final since 2014, which is disappointing. So,
and that's hurting Kenny Hinkley.
Kenny Hinkley is under the pump big time. And I still think that they're one key defender down. They need to go out and get another key defender.
Good. That was my next question. Well played. Read my mind. So the expected score, that is interesting, because the one that jumps into the eight is Port Adelaide by a fair way, and the one that jumps out is West Coast. So their efficiency in front of goal and their ability to convert has put them in that position.
And that's why I think Port Adelaide do need to look at their forward line, because West Coast have got a good forward line. So they do score a lot when they get in there, which is completely debunking.
We know what you're trying to say. Yeah. Okay.
The teams with one big forward, like Charlie Dixon's the only sort of tall forward, you can get numbers back and they struggle. You need the two-pronged attack works like West Coast.
No, I was right with what I said. I thought I'd stuffed it up there. But they've got the good... They've got the good forwards, West Coast. I wish I had that last 30 seconds. Go to a break.
We're going to get to a break. We've only got one more team to get through. Then we've got the Friday face-off. That doesn't disappear this week. Don't you worry about that. Might be a different sort of opportunity for the boys to get their teeth into. But there'll still be a Friday face-off. If you haven't registered, straight to the website, rsn.net.au. We'll talk about the Hawks, and then we'll do the Friday face-off after this on the Friday Footy Season Review with Brent Harvey, the AFL Games record holder.
Welcome aboard the Breakfast Club.
About the long game for us, and so we need to continue to work out ways that we can improve the quality of our playing list, because there's a gap between us and the top sides. We sit where we do on the ladder for a reason, and that's we haven't been good enough and consistent enough in big moments throughout the course of the year, and we need to rectify that. And part of that is the quality of our list, and part of it's to do with the method in which we play, and we'll work really hard over the summer to get that better, and we'll see where we go.
Hawthorn legendary coach Alistair Clarkson, four-time premiership coach, talking about the season that was for the Hawks. Not good enough from them. 15 wins last year in position of fourth. This year, 11 wins and ninth. Boys, after round 15, they were a different team. They had a fourth best percentage in that time with 135%. It was 96 in rounds 1 to 15. And they conceded just 61 points per game from round 16 to 23. So they flipped the switch. They played a different brand. They restricted teams to levels they hadn't done since 1963, I think. The champion data told us last week, Whitey. So they've worked out something, but they need to add some players, don't they?
Yeah, they changed a lot of what they did offensively in the second half of the year, which sees the scores go up. But you talked about what they did from round 16 onwards. If you then throw into the mix the game that they lost, the unlosable against the Dogs, and the Dogs kicked all those goals in the last quarter when Hawthorn had two less on the bench and Sicily and O'Meara were giving away those free kicks.
Yep.
The St Kilda game was not dissimilar. And they also lost to Melbourne, which was a really bad loss when you look back at it in reflection. You give them those three and all of a sudden they're comparable with what they did last year. So I think they'll be much better next year. I think they are going to be a team that are going to be quite aggressive in the off-season. They've played their card in a sense by being in the market for Cornelio and offering him over $1 million a year. So they know, we all now know that they've got cap space. They don't usually miss on their targets either. So I think they're going to be a good team. We've got to remember Mitchell comes back. But I still think, and I know they played a lot of the year, that Scully and Wingard will be new recruits as well because they'll have a preseason into both of them.
The Chads last month on ball was outstanding.
Midfield Chad was good, Chad.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, that was...
We talked
Clarko
about this.
Just put him in there and said, just play, and it was impressive.
We talked about this on By the Numbers yesterday and then for about 45 minutes after the show about, I reckon Clarko's got this view that if you can get six absolute star players, you can build a team around those six. And he probably needs to add one or two more, and he has a team that can contend. He just needs to find them.
They missed by one game, and you mentioned those teams that they lost to, St Kilda, Melbourne, Sydney, North Melbourne.
And if Hawthorn were in there, you wouldn't have wanted to play them.
Nah, but they were a little bit inconsistent for me for that reason, and they were a nightmare for tips because they beat the teams. They beat West Coast, Geelong, Collingwood, GWS twice. So they beat the good teams, and then they lose. They lost to St Kilda, Melbourne, Sydney, North Melbourne, and lose. Don't make the eight by one game. Their percentage is better than Essendon's, so they would have played finals. One more win. I know it's hard. You can pick out every single team can do it, but they should have won the games. They should have won.
But even though second in the end of the year, the game against North Melbourne, where they were five goals up early, the game against Brisbane, where they just didn't capitalise their good work with the wind in the first quarter down in Tassie, they've got a real what-if year, I reckon, Hawthorn.
All right, that's the Hawks. So let's get the
Friday. You reckon half?
Oh, I reckon they'll be okay. I think the emergence of a player like Mitchell Lewis, the Warpedo, just finding levels.
Yes.
And I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more with Scully and Wingard. I think another preseason into them. The midfield Chad's a good Chad, and Tom Scully will feel more confident about himself.
James Warple, second year player.
Yeah, he's a beauty.
If you watched him and didn't know much about football, he's been in the system for 5 or 6 years.
He is a beauty. Time for the Friday face-off, boys, before we get to the news. Ryan Crowley after that. Round of golf for four at Warragul Country Club. Drinks in the bar after, plus $150 voucher even at the Mail Exchange Hotel in the city. The Memsie Stakes is up for grabs. I get to go first. For Noel Fisher in Berwick, I am taking the favourite, according to the bookies at tab.com.au, and Mark Hunter's top pick, number 11, Elise. So that is the winner. Scotty, you're representing Rammer?
Dean Williamson from Maui. We're on Lindsay Smith's Scales of Justice.
Which was also in the numbers, second select for Mark Hunter. Boomer, you're next up.
Yeah, and this is where I come to my thoughts. This is what I do, horse racing. I'm all over this stuff.
Well, you're a tab man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm playing for Tony Green. That's Tony, not Toby.
Right.
So Tony Green from Hoppers Crossing, and we're going with number 6, Cliff's Edge.
Good
big
selection.
Chance.
Good selection. In fact, Scales of Justice was his fourth tip. 6, Cliff's Edge was his second tip, Mark Hunter. So that's a good selection by you. Well played. Good advantage in your position. And Whitey, which means you've got the last selection in the Memsie.
Chris Devers from Ascot Vale is my selection, and I'm going to go with a real roughie here. I'm going to go with Humidor.
First up.
Did you win it last year, Humidor? Did you win it last year?
I'm going with Humidor.
One first up last year.
Gut feel.
Could be late scratching.
Humidor on his day.
I like it.
He's winning too, Whitey. 7.
Well, I'm going fourth pick, so I may as well sort of try and throw a rabbit out of the hat.
Fair enough,
Paul,
too.
Paul.
Good luck to...
throw it out of the hat.
I'll be throw you the rabbit if it goes no good.
Good luck to all our contestants on the Friday Face-Off. More Footy Friday Face-Off next week on the Footy Preview. Boomer's going to stick around. Ryan Crowley's about to tag him hard.
What?